The following recording is copyright 2013, Diocese of Little Rock, all rights reserved. For more information, visit www.dolr.org.
Every year on Palm Sunday, we have the story of Jesus' passion and death from one of the three synoptic gospels. This year, it was Luke. And then on Good Friday, every year, we have John's version of these events. The synoptic accounts focus on Jesus' suffering to the very limit of human endurance, to which John then adds details that point also to Jesus' divinity, which the other gospels, details that the other gospels do not record. We see Jesus' divinity shining forth right from the time of Jesus' arrest. In John's version, you just heard that a band of soldiers was sent to arrest Jesus along with the Jewish guards. Now, obviously, these were Roman soldiers. The Romans did not allow the Jews to have an army. They were an occupied country. And this band of soldiers would have either been a cohort of 600 men or a maniple of 200 men. Why the huge number? Possibly because they knew Jesus had special powers. Once they arrived, Jesus, and this is a quote, knowing everything that was going to happen to him, went out and said to them, "Who are you looking for?" He went out, they didn't have to chase him down. He went out to meet them with his dignity intact. And notice that John portrays Jesus as being in full control even of his own arrest. And when they say that they had come for Jesus the Nazarene, his response was, "I am," which is an explicit claim to divinity. God's full name in Hebrew means "I am who am," which was often shortened simply to "I am." That's why it's so significant that Jesus didn't say, "I am he whom you seek," but rather simply, "I am." And as an indication of Jesus, the truth of Jesus' claim to divinity, we are told that at that point, those who had come to arrest him turned away and fell to the ground, which is what people in the Bible do in the presence of God or his angelic messengers. This majestic opening sets the stage for all that follows. Throughout John's account, Jesus remains in complete control as the master of his destiny. Indeed, from John's perspective, Jesus' adversaries were really the ones on trial. First Annas, and then Pilate, especially, who knows that Jesus is innocent, says so, but is too cowardly to do what justice requires. Unlike any man facing death who had ever before appeared in his court, Jesus stands before Pilate as a king, king of the Jews. Hours later, Pilate will order this title to be affixed above Jesus' head on the cross, posted in three languages: Latin, the language of political and military power at that time; Greek, the language of commerce and culture; and Hebrew, the language of religion and the Bible, whose prophecies were being fulfilled in these very events. The possibility that even Pilate had come to understand the truth of Jesus' kingship can be inferred from the fact that when Jesus' opponents wanted the sign to be altered to read, "He said I am the King of the Jews," Pilate refused, saying, "What I have written, I have written." So here, hours earlier, during his trial, we have Jesus, the King of the Jews, discussing, quite improbably, his kingship and his kingdom with Pilate, representative of the largest and most powerful empire of the ancient world. And then Pilate engages Jesus on the question of the nature of truth. And later, after his scourging and torture, Pilate asks Jesus where he comes from. This leads to a discussion of the source of Pilate's own power. Again, not the sort of conversation you'd expect a Roman procurator to have with a man standing there before him wearing a crown of thorns. And so it goes in John's gospel. From the cross, Jesus even had the self-possession to make final arrangements for the care of his mother by John, while at the same time giving his mother to the church, represented by John, to his mother. And then, bowing his head, still in full control of what was going on, Jesus handed over his spirit. And then he, who, in fitting with his divinity, was born into the world from a virgin womb, was now buried in a virgin tomb, so to speak. A tomb in which no one had yet been buried.